I wish to thank all those students and our invited guests for the festival who have come many long ways from their homes, from their colleges, and are here to spend some time to receive inspiration and then to give this inspiration to others. Also, the whole team of dedicated devotees here in the temple have been cooking all the day for the great inspiring feast. So that's the inspiration for today also. A nice feast. So now, I wish to present a very, very burning topic in every student's life or every person's life. And this topic is all about to do about let go and live free. Something which we always wanted to do to get free, but somehow or other we got shackled, we got bound up, and we could not manage. Everyone here of will always have this notion, will agree to this fact, that we always wanted to give up something to receive something valuable, but because of so many influences that we have in our life, we could not achieve that thing. Right? So therefore we set this topic of let go and live free is all about change, how you change. We want to change, we talk about change, we discuss about change, but we never change. We have seminars about change management in management circles, how the companies will effectively change their management, their structures, their operations, and how to deal with the employees' help, accept the change. But when it comes to change, that's the difficult thing. Therefore, something we need to discuss here is, when you go today from this place here, you would have made 1% change. And that 1% change will give the strength to make the 99% change in your lives. So hopefully this seminar or a short presentation with many other inputs will help you appreciate that a change is necessary, and we really are late, and better late than never. So we start off basically with the theme of people wanting to live free. I've seen some few slogans, and some of them say that I get what I want, live wire free, right? Aisi Azadi aur kaha, right? So many slogans about Azadi. How the students, how the youngsters must live free, must not feel burdened, must act free, must express their freedom. And that's what the whole world is talking about. So, once there were a group of children, as we see in India, Makar Sankranti is a time when people fly kites, right? So this kite flying was going on, and there were many kites in the sky, flying high in the sky. One kite felt, because it was a huge breeze opposing, going in the other direction, but a string was pulling in this direction, and that was keeping the kite soaring higher and higher by the expert maneuvering of the kite flyer. So it so happened, suddenly this kite felt, you know, I'm so high in the sky anyways, let me be free. I want to be free in the wind, free to soar. Why do I need this rope always pulling me and showing me the way? And so, suddenly the kite's desire fulfilled and the string snapped. And lo and behold, the kite was free. Absolutely free. alone in the sky, no one to control, no one to pull on, no one to guide, no one to direct, just be free. And then the kite went a little high in the sky, but an unsympathetic breeze just pulled over the kite and smashed it down, and kept smashing, kept pushing it down, pushing and pushing, until this kite came straight down into a thorn bush and just landed on the top of this thorny bush. And as the first contact with the thorny bush came, it tore into pieces. My dear friends, we talk about freedom, but it comes at a price. And if you want to enjoy real freedom, what is the real freedom for the kite? To allow itself to be guided by the expert kite flyer. So, by the expert guidance of the kite flyer, the kite can actually soar higher and higher and not fall prey to the unsympathetic breezes. Therefore, we said that most of the times in this world, we're talking about a free culture. But what this freedom of culture which is there has brought about? The whole culture of the United States of America, which expresses free life, to do what you want. Right? You don't need to tell me what I should do in my life. That's the attitude. And the culture has brought nothing but worries, anxiety, stress, and most of all, a pill culture. Along with the culture of freedom, people feel that if I have a problem, I can solve it. What's the big deal? I can just take a pill and I can solve the whole problem. And therefore, the whole culture is about two things. Take a sleeping pill if you don't get sleep in the night. And when you're heavy with the side effects of the sleeping pills, then do not forget to keep an antidepressant in the morning. Right? That will be nice. Once upon a time, it so happened, a worried, underslept, working professional went to a doctor. And he said, "My dear doctor, I have not been able to get sleep since past 1 month. I have tried everything. Nothing gets over this problem of sleep." So this doctor came and told, "Okay, fine. I've got the latest sleeping pill. It is the most powerful. And what doesn't keep you sleeping?" And he said that there are dogs barking all night long. Usually you find that when everyone goes to sleep, when the whole neighborhood is asleep, suddenly dogs, they start finding this. Now it's our time now. The humans have barked the whole day, honking their horns, shouting over, crying out, "Take this fruits and take all this," the hawkers. They kept shouting, "Now it's our time. They disturb our peace in the morning, we'll disturb their peace in the night." And that's how, he said, "My dogs are chasing. They're barking really loud. What to do?" He said, "Take the sleeping pill, it'll solve your problem." This person comes back after 3 days of really serious, sincere try with the sleeping pill. And then he comes and tells to the doctor, "Doctor, it is not working at all. Please do something, give some solution." He said, "What happened? This is the strongest sleeping pill on the market." He said, "What did you do?" He said, "Last 3 days, I've been chasing those dogs and trying to give that dog that pill, but he does not swallow it." So, what we think is that I don't have a problem, someone else has. I am free. And therefore, everyone wants to express his false freedom. Therefore, we see that not only that we get the freedom, but actually we are bound in that freedom. Something like this. A real life incident in a New York, in a company, in a newspaper agency, in a proofreading company, there was a person, and this article was published in New York Times, on the 22nd of January 2003. This person, the employee of this company, name is George Teukelbaum. He was 53 years old. He was a proofreader at that company. And he was very hardworking employee, very loyal, very faithful. And one fine day, the sweeper came and just, you know, touched George. It's time to go home. He spent 7 days here at the company. And he just touched him. And lo and behold, he just collapsed on his desk. And they found that George was dead. Amazed and surprised by the post-mortem reports, they revealed that George had died 5 days ago on his seat, suffering a severe coronary heart attack. Everyone was amazed. Everyone asked, this person is working in the office amidst 23 colleagues. How did no one ever noticed that he just died? Amazing. And he said, yes, actually it's not an amazing thing, because George was accustomed to work hard day, hard work all day and night long, and he would not take off on the weekends, and he would be absorbed, and he would always be to himself. He would not be talking to many people. So we thought that he was absorbed in his work. And the irony of the fact that George Teukelbaum was proofreading medical texts at the time when he actually received that coronary attack. So the moral says that don't get too busy over working hard, so that even that no one even notices you that you are dead. Therefore, we need to take our time and priority to experience real freedom. So under the name of freedom, what we have got is a pure bondage. Something like this. A very nice statistic I got. In prison, you spend the majority of your time in an 8x10 cell. And in office, you spend the majority of time in a 6x8 cubicle. In a prison, you get 3 free meals a day. And in work, you get a break only for one meal and you pay for it. In prison, you get time off for good behavior. Okay, you get a time off, you get a day off. Good job. At work, you get more work for good behavior. You are promoted. You get promotions where you take more responsibility. Now you are the project leader. One of the students I was talking to was with us, and he has just joined a company. And he was telling me, Prabhuji, I'm due to get a promotion. I'm waiting for that promotion. Then I will change my job, because then I get a higher rank to go on from. And he said, what's the post? He said, that's project leader. I said, my God, really? That's good. You'll make a lot of advancement, you'll make a lot of money later on. And then, when I called him, when he became the project leader, Prabhuji, I am running after everyone. Finish this task. Please do it on time. And I have to wait until they finish. And that's how I am in more misery. I was free as a team participant, as a team member. But now as a project leader, I have become more bound up. I have to spend, the bosses take the laptop home and work from home. Don't worry, we'll give an extra pay. So that's what the bondage and freedom is all about. In prison, you can watch TV and play games. At work, you get fired for watching TV or playing games or even browsing on the internet. Right? Sometimes the companies even block all those sites that you don't browse too much on the internet. That's the real thing. In prison, they allow your family and friends to visit. At work, you can't even speak to your family on the phone. And at prison, the taxpayers pay all the expenses with no work required. And at home, at work, you get to pay all the expenses to go to the work, and they deduct taxes from your salary to pay for the prisoners. Because prison industry is the number one industry in the United States. Therefore, taxpayers pay heavy amount of sums. In prison, you spend most of your life inside bars wanting to get out, and in work, you spend most of your time wanting to get out and go inside bars. Right? You're wanting to get out of the office, but then you're told, no, you work in a cubicle. In prison, you must deal with sadistic wardens. Very cruel, very harsh. And in work, they're called managers. They're just a different uniform. Right? They wear uniforms like you. Right? So this is what we see, that people are so much involved. The students feel, I complete my graduation, well, that's over. Now I am free. I have no more exams. I have no more submissions. I have no more responsibilities to study. I simply have to work, that's all. I don't have a dual life that I have to study, go to the college, and so many other things to do. No more books now, right? But then when you enter this, a different kind of prison, which you thought was a very, very smaller one, a very uncomfortable one, you go to a more uncomfortable place, right? At least you could bunk your classes, right? But you can't bunk your work here, right? So that's how it happens. And therefore we see that even office life in London, the Daily Telegraph newspaper reported very, very severe statistics where people, 42% of employees wanted to kill their boss, were imagining killing their boss as they're talking to them. I want to kill you, right? That is the kind of emotions that people are going through. And that's why we say that freedom is a real, a utopian dream here in this world as we follow the normal norms here. Therefore we see the world we live in is a me world. Everything is centered around me. It's a me world, then it's a dog-eat-dog world, right? Dogs are fighting for one piece of bread, right? Here, many professionals, many executives are fighting for one post, right? So it's just the nature of the bread is different, and the people running after the bread are dressed differently. And in said that, actually, it's a rat race. We have seen, we are running right from the morning. It's a rat race, right? Rats do not have so much competition, it seems. Actually, when you see the whole situation, right, in this city of Mumbai, even rats are more fortunate than the humans, right? Because humans are the most dangerous animals, right? Once it said in the zoo, and there was a caption written, the most dangerous animal, and there was a portrait of a sculpture of a human being. That was the most dangerous animal. Therefore, we find that people are not even becoming humans. Once a servant went to the master, a disciple, and asked him, how can I become a great man like you? And the master said, being a man is itself a great achievement. And that's what we need to become now, humans. So if you are actually coming first in the rat race, you end up becoming a rat only. You are the first rat, right? And therefore we see that we have this tendencies of animals, these three major tendencies, grab. Have you seen grabbing? If you've not seen, just go back to a flashback a few minutes ago. If you travel by a train or you travel by a bus, when I come from our college to Dadar station, and that train is about to start from Dadar back again to some other stops. That means the train is now empty and is going to go in the rush time, in the rush hour, in the peak hours. And what you can do is simply to stay back and just know, it feels like you need to really shoot this scene. Right? Imagine the whole train is empty and there are a lot of wolves, like people, hungry for that seat, for the piece of flesh. And just as the train enters, just touches the platform, and you find somebody's banging the whole place. And you find people, jumping along, crashing along, some other trying to get inside. And all thing only for one seat. And sometimes even people fight for their seat. Like once Radha Gopinath Prabhu was mentioning that, generally that's the tradition, like people stand, and there's some seat empty, so the person who is the first, he gets the first seat. I mean, anyone gets up, he gets to enter. He is the first claimant, so-called. There are no late rules for occupancy in railway coaches, right? So then this person comes and he enters, and there is another person who is in the behind. And if the four seat gets empty, he just grabs onto it. Something happens and there is a fight. Oh no, this seat was mine. This seat was mine, and they keep fighting. Both people get up now. This person got a seat. He gets up and starts fighting. And by the time they start fighting, someone else will sat on the seat. And they both have to get down at some stop. They keep fighting. They get down on the platform. They keep fighting, but the seat is already gone. They still keep fighting for the lost seat. And that's how the whole world is about grabbing. And grabbing never makes people happy. Then what about, in fact, the children have their toys and the adults have their own bigger toys. They grab to various possessions like education, seats, jobs, reservations and so many things. And that's how we see from the grab mentality, we are not happy. We want to keep holding on to it. I got a recent statistic from the justice courts that the majority of the litigation cases are all about property cases involving family feuds. And family feuds means people of the same family fighting over property. And why they are fighting over the property? Because the person who is a deceased member, that is one who has died, he never wrote a will purposefully, because he never wanted to partake. He wanted the claimants to fight in court and make them feel unhappy about the whole affair, and he never wanted to share even after he has died. And that's how the major disputed cases are all about these kind of cases. And what about the tendency of holding is not enough? The tendency goes more than that. And it is said that people, even after holding, they want something more. There's something with them and they want it more and more. Like there are there's a very famous family, very industrial and a very rich family, prestigious family, and they're broken down into two now. So the younger one, the younger brother, is having a lesser edge over others, and he has a less capital compared to the elder brother. But he has a lot of money. He has no shortage of money. He is good, very, very, very flourishing business. But just so that he is lesser than his counterpart brother, he is not satisfied and he works an extra, a total hours of 14 to 15 hours a day and never takes a Sunday off on the weekend. Just imagine this kind of working for more and more and more has brought us more to bondage than to freedom. We are expecting one day the freedom will come, but it never happens although. So I just got a nice clipping of human beings who actually never feel that they are having enough. So we'll have a look at this and something for your pleasure.
An SUV. Humans ride around in it because they are slowly losing their ability to...
Enough is never enough for humans, and therefore they are never free. They are always working for more, more, and more. So, my dear friends, something a little part of our lives which deals with this fact. But in every aspect of our life, we actually are never happy with what we have. And we are always looking what other fellow has. Therefore, this has never brought us happiness. This has never brought us freedom. And therefore, we talk about letting go. Now, what is this letting go? Now, people are very confused about this topic because, you know, it's never much known about this terminology about letting go. So someone said, let's go. Maybe it's let's go. Let's go and live free. Let's go to Chopati. And we, you know, live free. Nice seminar. But actually, something about letting things which are self-imposed burdens, self-imposed barriers, self-imposed addictions, self-imposed false beliefs and conceptions, if we simply leave them away, if we simply cast them away, then our life is happy. We don't have to do something extraordinary. We simply have to leave what is burdensome for us. Therefore, in the scriptures, this is technically called as anarthas. Anarthas means unwanted things, unwanted desires, unwanted conceptions. So today we are going to just focus something on the unwanted. Simply shedding off what's unwanted, we will able to usher in the most wanted thing in our life. That is a life of bliss, freedom and eternity. And that's what the soul is hankering for. So, we're just discussing something about letting go. I just thought about how people want to give up an extra fat. Because in the United States of America, the scene is something really topsy-turvy. It is said that where 12,000 Chinese can fit in a stadium, 8,000 Americans only will be able to fit. Right? And the slogan is, or the kind of diet slogan is, "Thou shall not eat more than your refrigerator." Right? That's the commandment. And therefore, people, teenagers, they are growing fat. I'm not talking about the old people. 1 in 5 teens in the United States of America are obese or overweight. Something like this. And then what they have to do? They have to take the gym. They have to take some kind of exercise. And they keep on complicating and binding themselves more and more and more. And that's how we see giving up an extra fat is always very, very happier thing. Then what do people want to give? An extra baggage for those who are doing a mountaineering task. As they go, they travel light. And then what about work pressure? We want to give up an extra stress. One of the devotees were reporting this kind of extra stress. A student from the UICT, when he was nearing his exams, he was working very hard for it. And then he found that he has less time and he has more to cover up his portion. So he kept studying hard. And he now realized 2 days before the exam that he has no time to sleep. He went off 2 days, 48 hours without sleeping. And what happened later? He went off, he covered all his portion, went confident in the paper. Was very, very upbeat. As the paper came to him, happy, everything he studied was in the question paper. Kept writing, but his energy levels had been sucked since the last 48 hours. Now just he had a little reserve remaining in which the first hour of his answering the paper, he lost his reserves. And tragedy fell upon him. He just slept after 1 hour. Cozily, peacefully on the question paper with all his answers permeating through his brain into the question paper without physically being manifest there. As if he was transmitting his answers in sleep. He had all the answers here, but he could never make it. And when he woke up, it was too late. So my dear friends, what we mean to say is that we need a little stress, but when we have extra stress, we want to give it up. We want to let it go. We want to let go of extra fat. We want to let go of the extra baggage. We want to let go of the extra stress. So letting go is a very fulfilling and very, very enriching experience. And as against people feel, why are you telling to let go? Already I have so much less now. I have nothing with me. And you're telling to let go whatever that I have also. So my dear friends, no. Never think that. And we'll discuss slowly about how actually we can scientifically and very, very consciously let go of those unwanted things. So we discuss like what is letting go? Simply shedding or releasing things, emotions and beliefs which creates an adverse effect to a healthy well-being and a progressive life. Just like there was a hunter. He was hunting in a forest which was a zone not to kill any wild animals because this was a wildlife sanctuary. So this hunter came about shooting this deers and so many jackals. So he had hunt a wolf. And he was just about to catch that wolf. And he was about to pick that dead animal for his sale. Immediately he found there was a jeep. The patrol jeep came across. And then they found, he became very scared. Maybe these people will hunt me down and they will find me with a dead animal which I am not supposed to shoot or kill, and I will be caught. So what did he do? This jackal, he just hid under his coat. Little to his knowledge, he came to know that this jackal had not completely died. Right? And it was a little alive. A little alive means his teeth were working. And that the flesh was very close to him. Right? So he didn't have to hunt for food to go long. He was cozily under nice compartment. He was having his own plate, his food, and a nice piece of his teeth were ready to bite on the flesh. So this hunter found that there is something biting me. My heart is piercing me. So he found that actually something is piercing, and then finally came to know that there is a jackal who is a little alive to eat his flesh. But he didn't want to let go of the jackal simply because he didn't want to get caught. He said, better I part with my little flesh than to being caught by that hunter, by the patrol, by the police. So this fellow kept waiting, patiently tolerating the pain of being eaten away. But when the patrol jeep passed across him, when he finally, the time to release the jackal had already finished half of his heart and he collapsed on the ground dead. So why, dear friends, sometimes we feel, I must not give this away. Children don't want to give their toys. Adults don't want to give their properties. And sometimes we don't want to give our most cherished things. But when they start taking our energy, they start taking our life, we still hold on to it. Like Muhammad Ghazni, when he was in the deathbed, he was always asking, I am going to die, but please bring my treasury. I want to see my treasury, at least when I am alive. But he could not do anything. In the grief that he is going to leave all this treasury behind, he died early. And that's how we can tell that is letting go is extremely beneficial, extremely important, it's extremely urgent. We have to get the courage to let it go for our own good. And therefore we find that this letting go is a very significant principle that helps in everyday's life. A nice statistic which all of us will be rather amazed to know, that 40% of things I worry about will never happen, for anxiety is a result of tired mind. That means we always have some anxiety which we don't want to let go, but actually that's an imaginary anxiety. 30% concern old decisions which cannot be altered. I got a KT. What to do? For 15 days, 20 days, I have given for revel. Kuch to ho jayega, right? Though I got 17, even now I can get 20 marks, 3 marks in a grace. We are always expecting. Now some things are only there all the time which we cannot reverse, but rather accept it and then go forward. Now, students typically, they have so many of these things which they don't want to let go. And that's how it keeps on eating them up slowly till they become completely disabled to function as a normal, healthy human being. 12% of the things that we have in life center in criticisms. Mostly untrue, made by people who feel inferior. Right? And we are always thinking, isne ye kaha, usne wo kaha, isne aisa kyun kaha? Iska kya ja raha hai isme? And we keep on harboring our mind on these criticisms. 10% is related to my health, the problems which worsens while I worry. And only 8% of the anxieties and concerns that we have in life are legitimate, showing that life does have real problems which may be met head on while we have eliminated senseless worries. So my dear friends, This is all imagination of the uncontrolled mind which does not want to let go. Therefore, the fact that we have to do this is a very nice sculpture. We can learn from this nice sculpture which Michelangelo made. This was a classic work of Michelangelo, which actually was made after many years of hard work. And what does Michelangelo say is also very significant. The more the marble weighs, the more the statue grows. And I simply release the stone. I really simply release the statue from the stone. So my dear friends, if you are feeling, what do I have to let go? Do I have to give up something? No. You simply have to let the thing which is the real thing to come up. And therefore the scripture says, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhika Bunoy Shramana Dishuddha Chitte Karayudai. That means the living entity is eternally blissful, eternally happy. But when it simply gives up those unwanted things, the inner happiness, peaceful and eternity and well-being simply emerges. And that's how we find that this letting go is very important. All about forgiveness and all about, you know, sometimes keeping grudge with some people. So once upon a time a teacher wanted to teach the students how they must not harbor these grudges, harbor these ill feelings towards others. And the teacher told, so tomorrow everyone will bring a sack of potatoes with them. All of them brought. And they told, so when you don't forgive someone, to someone whom you feel grudged and someone whom you have harsh feelings, just take a potato and write his name on it. Take the potato, write a name on it, write a date, and put it in your fresh sack. So the students, they started following this teacher's instructions. And the teacher's instructions were there, wherever you take, have this, put this potato in your sack, you have to carry with them always. Whether you are in home, whether you are driving, whether at a school, whether you are in your sleep, you have to keep them with you always. And you have to keep for a long time. And then the students kept these potatoes, and soon these potatoes became smelly. Such a gruesome, such a horrible smell. They could not stand that smell. And then they realized there was so much of embarrassment, so much of guilt feeling that no, we have these potatoes with us. Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath ki jai. Jai Shishi Gopal ji ki jai. Jai Shishi Gorithai ki jai. That's how we realize that when our potatoes get heavy, then we realize we have to let go. And that's how we find that a classic example in the Bhagavad Gita. And we understand from that section of the Bhagavad Gita what is not letting go. Because what people think, very nice, you come to this society and they tell you to give up everything, and you get nice prasad, you get a nice place to stay, and you don't have to take any responsibilities. Such a nice thing, such a peaceful life. You are sitting here giving lecture, and like you have a nice accommodation, you have nice food, you don't have to work. You simply give up and you are here. Wow, and so many people who have work are coming to hear you. So such a nice thing. Why not let go everything and join the Hare Krishnas? A good proposition. Right? Actually not. Unless we understand what is not letting go, we realize what is real letting go. And therefore we realize in this thing that this letting go is not about defeat. Oh, I am defeated now. Let us do something. And then it's not about disinterest. I know many of your students are disinterested in what you are doing. Am I right or wrong? Yes? Are you very happily going to your colleges? Are you very happily giving your exams? Are you very happily going on to your job? Are you very happy with working with your boss? No. It's with a kind of disinterest. Disinterest is there and dismay. What a sick world this is. What a sick way to start the life in the morning. Get up in the morning when you don't want to get up in the morning. Right? And then go to the job where you don't want to do the job. Go to the class where you don't want to go to the class. See the teacher which you don't like to see. Just for the sake of 75% attendance. And that's how the students deal in their life. Just for the sake of the heck of doing it. They are just doing it. They are not doing it out of affection for the teachers. And sometimes Teacher's Day. Students celebrate Teacher's Day. Now what is a Teacher's Day? I came to know. One student said, well, I'm going to a place and, you know, I'm going to the other flower market and getting a lot of flowers for the teachers. He said, why? Wow, what a kind of affection you have for the teachers. He said, no, actually, this is to undo all the torture that we have done against them. At least this day they will forgive us. And we can start a new, fresh chapter of torture thereafter. And that's how people deal. It's dismay, disinterest. And it is all about dejection. So it's not defeat. It's not because we are defeated, we want to give up. It's not because we are disinterested, we want to give up. It's not because of dismay and dejection that we want to give up these things. It's not out of sheer cowardice that we want to give up things. And therefore, we have to really understand what is real letting go. And we realize in the situation, we'll just read this nice short anecdote. To let go is not to cut myself off. It is a realization that I can't control another. To let go is to admit powerlessness, which means the outcome is not in my hands. To let go is not to try to change or blame another. It's to make the most of myself. To let go is not to fix, but to be supportive. To let go is not to deny, but to accept. To let go is not to nag, scold or argue, but instead to search out my own shortcomings and correct them. To let go is not to adjust everything to my desires, but to take each day as it comes and cherish myself in it. To let go is not to criticize or regulate anybody, but to try to become what I dream I can be. To let go is not to regret the past, but to grow and live for the future. This explains not everything. So, Arjun had a different idea of letting go in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna was really not interested to fight. He went to write, imagine you are going to to write your paper, you have prepared everything, everything is set, and you see the question paper, and you feel, my God, this first question is like Bhishma, the other is like Dronacharya, and rest other compulsory questions, non-optional questions are like the Kauravas, right? Odd short answer questions, nothing seems to go in my mind. Enough, I give up. I renounce my claim. I am not fit to be an engineer. I admit my own disqualifications. I am very honest. So, we have the similar kind of experience which Arjuna had about the concept of not letting go, which is a false conception. Let us try to understand this, because these things come in our life, day-to-day affair. We want to give up with life. We are bored with life. We want to give up all things. We are frustrated. And we do some things out of great intolerance and impatience, and later on we regret. And this whole Bhagavad Gita is simply to guide the whole humanity towards the right direction. Not to commit any blunders, but at the same time follow the right path. So we see here from the Bhagavad Gita.
Teachers, uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, and friends. When Arjuna saw all his seven friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion. Oh Krishna, see my friends and relatives present before me with such a fighting spirit. I feel my body quivering. My mouth is drying up. My hair is standing on end. My Gandiva bow is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. I am unable to stand here any longer. My mind is reeling, Krishna. I see only causes of this. disaster in this war. Then Arjun cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot, overwhelmed with grief.
This is Arjuna's letting go. He wanted to give up his Gandiva bow and not fight. So the whole thing of this Bhagavad Gita is to understand what is not letting go. Not simply being defeated by the opposing situations, the intolerable conditions in your life, but rather facing the life head on in reality. So now, as we see the Arjuna in the first chapter, and then we will see the transformed Arjuna in the last chapter, when he really lets go. And that's how lets go with victory. So now, we shall just briefly go ahead upon different levels of letting go in our lives. There are three different levels. Physically letting go, emotionally or psychologically letting go, and spiritually letting go. These are the three levels that we have to face in our lives. So, first we'll discuss the physical, then psychological, and later spiritual platform. So, to discuss with this physical, very important, the first thing that we have in life, everything what is dear is all about possessions. A nice home, a nice car. I was just talking to some people, some boys, and where I go to the Somai College of Engineering, I heard a very sad incident, but rather instructive and very, very alarming one. There was a student of a third year engineering who was on his way back home. And as he was going back home, he found that there was a call coming on his cell phone. Now, as you see, you know, what happens when you get a call on a cell phone? You're shouting, hello, hello, and you're unable to hear clearly. This person simply could not hear because he was sitting in the train and the signals were not clear. So he got up, thinking that if I stand up and if I go near some airy space or free space, I'll be able to hear. He went across, still he could not hear. He went near the door where he could hear now clearly. So he simply leaned over the door to hear more clearly, and he lost his balance. And he just fell from that running train, and just the next moment, the train coming from the opposite direction smashed him. Sometimes it's our own attachments which actually, when we not let go, completely take toll of us. So we have mobiles, we have laptops, we have our so many gadgets that we are attached to. And sometimes when it comes to part with them, to part with and then to release ourselves from the great burden, we are so much possessive about them. So typically there was a fisherman. And in the traditional times, this fisherman, they would be going out, and the householders, they would invite the fishermen or some kind of people who wanted to eat. So this fisherman came to the house and said, "Would you like to eat?" He said, "Yes, I am hungry." So this fisherman was given some food, and then he said, "Can I rest here in the night?" He said, "Yes, definitely. But please keep your basket outside." He said, "Well, I'll try." So this fisherman kept his basket outside and he went to sleep. This householder came in the morning, came in the middle of the night as he was trying to find out whether his guest is comfortable or not. So this guest was turning left and right, not able to sleep. So he asked the guest, "Are you feeling uncomfortable? What's the problem? Can I help you?" He said, "Well, I am accustomed to sleep with my basket. Unless I smell of that fish, that flavor, that smell, I can't go to sleep." Right? We have all our sleeping aids, right? And typically I always remember that scene from that movie, from that Hindi movie, a silent movie, where that person was a very rag. He was rag to riches. And he wanted to, he became rich suddenly and he went off to stay in a 5-star plush, very fantastic hotel. And then he tried, he had nice comforts, cushions and comforts, everything. But he could not sleep. Why? Because in his previous neighborhood, the dogs are always barking. He needed a background music to sleep. So he went there, he recorded the background music of the dogs on his recording machine. And then he went in his 5-star hotel and played while sleeping. And then only he could sleep. Right. So these are the kind of addictions or the kind of tendencies that we have. So this is what we find, that people get addicted to possessions so much so that they don't want to give it up. And that's the cause of their misery and suffering. Unwanted possessions. And then the second is all about habits. Imagine, I know why there are few fortunate of us here in the Prerna Festival as compared to so many times you find a huge number. Because today is a very crucial match going on. It's India-Australia series, right? So typically, I have this experience myself and all of you will share. I mean, don't regret that you are not there. But just to explain this concept, a match is going on. Typically India and Pakistan. And that's just the day before your exams. And that's happened. It often happens. It is bound to happen and it will happen. Right? So don't be ready for it. If you're not successful now, you can try for the next time. Imagine that's the exam is going on, exam is just up and you're really crucial, you have not studied well. And all the people in your home are watching the television. And some other Pakistan plays first. And somehow, you know, makes around 275. And India is now batting second. So you're always eager. You're not ready now. But then when India starts, you said, I'll just see how in the opening, how does the opening batsman play. I'll be able to gauge, where India is going. The first over only will come to know whether India wins or not. Oh, and then we find that actually they just scored 3 runs in the first over. Say, never mind, at least they didn't lose their wicket. That's the good thing. Maybe I should keep hopes and not give up hopes. I'm a patriotic, I'm an Indian, I'm a very, very loyal citizen of this nation. I must cheer up my team despite all my difficulties and all my oppositions and all my challenges that I have for the exam. I will contribute from my side to the team. I will cheer up. There are so many Indians who have gone to the stadium to cheer. At least I can sit here and spend some 5 minutes with them. And you sit. And you're sitting with your textbook open. They just don't make a run, I'll just have a look, just memorize. And then some time passes by and there's a 4 and the batsman hits a 4-run. And you find hope. There is still hope. I must cheer my team. It's not too late. I have the time in the night. I can always study in the night. I can always study in the drinks break. Right? And I'll focus myself more nicely now. And that's how we are sitting glued to the television set over after over after over. I hope you all are with me. But don't remain there. Come back here. And that's how the letting go of that habit of being glued, being fixed, becomes so difficult. Even if you know it, you can't make it. You can't give it up. And that's because it has become a habit. You have now become forced by a habit to just accept the way it is. And that's how we find, even if there is something in the best of our interest, we still can't discern what's good for us because we can't let go of our bad habits. So therefore, this is a very important thing. And finally, we realize we are all working for money, the wealth. And wealth is never enough. We always want more and more and more. And sometimes we work so hard, we find that we work so hard that we die. Not living to actually spend that money. And this physically letting go is very important. So we have a very nice story related by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita about a transformation in the life of a hunter. Now this hunter was Mrigari. Mrigari, the enemy of the deer or the animals in the forest. And it's typical training that he was given that he had to kill animals not fully dead but half dead. And so Narad Muni happened to come on the path where he saw animals strewn on the path, half dead, flapping for their life, not able to die, not able to live. And he found out, who is this hunter who has killed this animal so mercilessly? And then he comes and finds that this hunter has killed his animals. So he goes to the hunter, "My dear hunter, why have you killed these animals half dead?" And then Mrigari says, "That's my training, that's my livelihood. I live by this profession." Narad Muni said, "If you at all have to kill animals, kill them full dead. Why you want to kill them half?" And he said, finally to this Mrigari, "You are living for a livelihood? What if I give your livelihood without you having to pursue this profession?" He thought for a while. He said, "Yes, if you give me a fixed kind of income, like, you know, fixed deposits, fixed income, I will take to it." Then he said, "Fine, first of all, break your bow. Break your bow, which is the source of your sustenance." And Prabhupada is mentioning that this was a test of his detachment and his faith. Narad Muni told Mrigari, "I will take care of you. I will take care of your maintenance and the maintenance of your family members. Just break the bow." And Mrigari, as a hunter, he just broke his bow with great faith, seeing Narad Muni's great conviction to help him out as a sadhu. And he broke the bow. And Narad Muni said, Now I shall give you the path by which you shall be happy, free of sinful life, and always satisfied." This Mrigari later on was advised to go to the outskirts of the village and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram." So you find, what is the big thing, you know, you're chanting, and how can this chanting bring about sustenance and maintenance to my life? And that's how he just went on. The whole village came to know that the hunter, Mrigari the hunter, who was killing animals half dead, is now become a sadhu. "Please, let us go and see him." Imagine if some most wanted dons would come to some temple and make their bhajan kutir, right, giving up all their connections, and then they would sit and meditate in one place. Definitely, everyone would go to look at least and peep through the window. Is he really becoming a sadhu? That's how the whole people went, the whole village went. And now the tradition is that as the people in the village go, they take with them some kind of presents for the sadhu. That's how people went with so many gifts and presents, and soon his kinds of the charities that were coming to him made his living more than actually what he was earning in one day. People gave so much charity. Not only his family members, because he could have fed even 4 or 5 homes. And that's how Mrigari the hunter became transformed. His life much more happier just by letting go of that bow. A physical possession, the most cherished, the most attached position, when he gave off, Narad Muni gave him a better alternative. A very, very pleasing alternative. Therefore, once when we see that when we have something in the hand, the child, the baby does not want to give, but the father wants to give us some more valuable thing to that baby. But just because he's holding on, the father cannot give. That's exactly with us. The Father, the Supreme Father, wants to give us the real thing, the real freedom, and we are living with our bondage and holding tight to our bondage. And that's how we see the life of Mrigari was so much transformed that we will see that even when Narad Muni and Parvat Muni went later on to meet Mrigari, they found that Mrigari was running towards them, but he was now careful not to place his feet on the ants, because now he did not want to kill anyone. And that's how we see the life of Mrigari was a transformational episode, because he simply let go of his most attached position. But he got something great benefit in return. So never think we are losers. The Lord is always wanting to bestow upon us the most choicest benedictions. And therefore, if we simply give something for the pleasure of the Lord is pleased to give us more than what we expect. So that's the whole thing. How can we give up the physical? By simply living simple. Simple living, high thinking. And replace the bad habits with the positive ones. Srila Prabhupada told, these Westerners, these hippies, they are addicted to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling and meat eating. But now they have given up everything. And now they are simply addicted to Krishna and chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. This is the transformation. And that's how they became happies. Hippies turned into happies simply because they gave up their bad habits. Right. And then, finally, to earn the wealth of satisfaction. So if we have some space here, we have a nice skit to be coming up and we'll explain this term, the wealth of satisfaction. So coming back to our letting go of physical things, just imagine, just letting go of the physical things is so intense. It's so an intense experience. Now, we get the courage to move on to the psychological aspect. And that's the most difficult of all. So, the most difficult of this thing is all about negative emotions. Guilt, disappointment, fear, anger, grief, guilt, and so many other negative emotions. As we harbor them, they keep on sucking our reserves. Like once upon a time, there was a millionaire who had his beautiful daughter. And he threw a party to everyone. And he told, I have a party and everyone is invited. I have a swimming pool which are filled with killing. Like these are killer alligators, killer crocodiles. And anyone who jumps in this pool and he comes out at the other end unscathed, alive, I will give my daughter to that brave man. So, some other, nothing happened for some time until they heard a splash in the water. A huge splash. And then they heard some kind of struggle, cry. Some other, this young chap fell into the lake. And struggling with the alligators, fearfully struggling, he escaped and came out at the other end. Everyone applauded, like we applauded for this nice performance. Everyone started, bravo, bravo, well done, well done. Great courage. The millionaire came, welcome, bravo, take the hand of my daughter, you are the most deserving one. The fellow was a little bit in a daze. He said, I don't want your daughter. I don't want this wealth. First of all, tell me who pushed me inside. So when you get something, but when you're emotional about something, we can't appreciate what we have. Because we are so emotionally disturbed, we cannot enjoy what we have with us. So negative emotions, if we do not let them go, we do not appreciate what we have. Rather, we lament for what we don't have. Right. In fact, another incident of dealing with disappointment. There was a very famous writer, a French writer, Thomas Carle. And in the 16th century, he wrote about the French Revolution. He collected all the resources for 6 years. And he had compiled them and he gave it to his friend John Stuart Mill to read and to make some corrections or additions. John Stuart Mill somehow or other misplaced the whole document and actually threw some documents which were unused, and he threw them in the fire. Later on, he remembered that the document, the whole thesis of Thomas Kahl, was burned in the fire. He was shocked. He went to Thomas Kahl and asked, and just revealed what had happened. Thomas Kahl took a very composed look and said, "Never mind, my friend. I will do it again." With a heavy heart, he let this friend go without any guilt or some kind of ill feeling, and he came back. He came back and told his wife what had happened. And this person said that somehow or other, I have lost this great piece of work, but what can I do than to start again? He started again and he wrote it back. So when some things happen to us and we are not able to let go of that negative emotion, we have one choice, either to dwell on it or to go forward. If you dwell on it, you never go forward, rather you go backward. But if you keep going on forwarding in your attempt, you forget what had happened in the past. So letting go of the past, letting go of the unfavorable situations will only help you to live better in the future. Similarly, this kind of victim thinking very, very much is dangerous to oneself, where you can clutch the past so tightly to your chest that it leaves your arm too full to embrace the present. So, when we start blaming others for our own, whatever it may be justified or not justified, but it simply makes our heart hard and not able to appreciate the good things in life. Genghis Khan was a king, and he had a favorite hawk who would always be on his fist, wherever to go for hunting. And it so happened that Genghis Khan would go on a hunting trip, and he came to a place where the hawk flew by. Chai Shishi Radha Gopinath Ji Ki, Chai Shishi Gopal Ji Ki, Shishi Gauri Thai Ki. So then this hawk simply traveled and did not come back. Genghis Khan was thirsty, so he found a stream where water was trickling, and he tried to get a cup full of water. The stream trickled by little water, and then it so happened, as it was getting full, the hawk suddenly came and swooped the cup full of water, and the water fell. This happened thrice, and Genghis Khan was very angry, and he decided, "I am going to kill this hawk if it comes the next time." And next time, as the hawk came, he drew out his sword and simply slashed the hawk and led him completely bleeding and wounded. As soon as this hawk was bleeding and wounding, he went ahead to get to the source of the stream, to get the water, and lo and behold, what does he find? The stream, the reservoir from which the water was coming, was filled with poisonous snakes. That means that this lake was filled with poison water, and had Genghis Khan drank that water, he would have died. The hawk was simply trying to save his master, but the master did not know it, and the master killed as a reward, or as a kind of reward for his, or a punishment for his great service. And later on, he lived in regret. So my dear friend, sometimes just keeping up to this victim thinking about someone, about something, about some relationships, it simply makes ourselves more and more situation as painful. And the other thing, particularly in the lives of the students, is all about daydreaming. Right? We are sitting in the front of our studies, in our books, and we are dreaming. I am writing the question paper, 29th of September, or it's like 20th October, it's Diwali time, right? And I have written the paper, and now I have come, now I'm just about to enter my vacation. What am I going to do after I complete my paper? Right? I'm going to go out for a movie, I'm going to go out for a restaurant, a nice outing, and I'm going to enjoy my Diwali vacation. And while preparing for exams, you are preparing how to enjoy your vacations. Right? Sometimes dreaming in the future and sometimes of the past. And therefore, the future is always beginning now. Now is the moment where you decide your future, where your future lies. So therefore, my dear friends, do not get psychologically disturbed and deviated and distracted by this victim or this daydreaming. So therefore, it's very important to let go of all these psychological barriers. And therefore, this typical and the most classic example from the Srimad Bhagavatam comes in the life of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj is a five-year-old boy who was having his father and his stepmother, of course his mother too. And when he was sitting in the lap of his father, his stepmother decried and insulted for sitting on the lap of his father. And your mother is less worthy than mine. And that's how she derided Dhruva Maharaj. So much so that this young chap, 5 years old, took the insult on him very, very seriously. He became so concerned, full of revenge, full of blame, full of anger. He went to his mother, "Give me a solution wherein I can go and ask God to fulfill my desire for revenge. Because I am not capable of doing it, let me take the help of God to take revenge." She was directed to go to the forest, where he met on the path Narad Muni. And Narad Muni told, "Let go. Let go of your revenge. You are a small kid. Enjoy with your toys. You are not meant to take this revenge is very seriously. You are a young chap. You play with your toys. You be in your own world. These things you keep forgetting. It's not a big thing. Go back home and let go." But Dhruva Maharaj was very, very serious. He said, "Give me a situation, give me the benediction where I can get a kingdom greater than that of my great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, and that's how I'll show my capacity to take the revenge." And that's how Dhruva Maharaj, he performed austerities for 6 months. And what happened? He saw the Lord face to face. When he saw the beauty of the Lord face to face, all the desires of feelings of revenge, hatred and blame and anger simply dissolved and crystallized and sublimated into pure feelings of affection, love and ecstasy for the beautiful form of the Lord. As he saw this beautiful form of the Lord, he asked for a benediction that I was asking for some broken pieces of glass which would simply hurt me and bleed me. I am asking to let go of these broken pieces of glass, the benediction of a kingdom, to give me a rare diamond of your devotion, of your service. And that's how Dhruva Maharaj was not only able to let go of his psychological barriers, was able to receive or allow the positive ecstasy into him. So unless we give away all these negative things, we cannot fill them with the positive alternatives. Therefore, the solution is to have a higher goal in life. And not simply the goals, the petty goals of this material world, which are bound to perish. And we need the association of great saintly people who will guide, who will direct, and not like Mantra, who poisons the mind of Kaikeyi to banish Lord Ram in the forest. Therefore, if we have good association, we will always be able to experience the positive emotions in us. At the same time, if we have association of friends who are like Mantra, who poison our God consciousness, they simply cause to banish the Lord within our heart from our life. Therefore, we need good association, a higher goal, and a determination to practice this path. And therefore, we have to use every opportunity as a stepping stone to go ahead for the higher goal. There is more to life, the more glory of God to be revealed in our lives, if we simply allow to let go of those worrisome, anxious thoughts. Therefore, we just come to the last section of the level of spiritually letting go, on the spiritual level. And the greatest barrier is that of the bodily conceptions of life. Once upon a time, Nasruddin Hoja was going for a banquet, a dinner party, And all the people came dressed in fine dresses, fur coats and very, very exotic dressing. As they were about to sit for the dinner, no one invited Nasruddin Hojja for the dinner. So he became very upset because he was very simply dressed. He was not very fashionably dressed. He went back, got his neighbor's fur coat, very, very, very expensive one, very exotic one, and he came back and he went into the party and everyone started inviting, please come for the dinner. And then when this person was eating, was having his dinner, he simply took all the nice delicacies and some he put in the first pocket in this coat, some he put inside, some he put behind, some he just splashed it on the fur coat, and everyone became upset. What the hell you are doing? You're supposed to eat. You're not. The fur coat is not supposed to eat. And that's how Nasruddin Hojja said, when I came in a simple dress, you did not invite me to eat. But when I came in fur coat, then you invited me very graciously. That means who is important? The coat and not the person. Therefore, I am feeding to the coat. Therefore, my dear friends, we are daily feeding our bodies. We are daily feeding our minds. But our souls are starving. Simply because we are attached to the coat and not to the person. Therefore, when we save the drowning man, Srila Prabhupada said, if you are a very expert swimmer and you simply catch and rescue the coat of the drowning man and you leave the man drowning inside the water and you say, I have succeeded in rescuing the coat. Imagine what kind of laurels that you will receive. Similarly, in our lives, we have to give up this conception and live very amicably with this conception of harmonizing the existence of a spirit soul in a temporarily material body. And therefore we see that we become very disturbed if there is a little bit of discomfort in the bodily platform. But if you are able to overcome that conception, we will be very, very happy and peaceful. The second is lordship and control. We want to boss over, right? Everyone is a boss. The servant is also boss in his own family, right? The boss has his own boss. And in this way, the whole people, the whole culture is just about becoming a boss. But when we find that our role is not that of a boss, but that of a servant, simple as that. A nice story illustrates this. There was a king, and this king had a very good friend. And this friend wanted to, he was a very poor friend of this king. So the poor friend said, you are so happy. I wish I could have been you, I would have been happy like you. The king said, fine. Right? You take my post for one day and you enjoy the life that I have. So this king, yes, I shall be happy. This poor friend went. He sat on the throne. All the soldiers came to welcome him, to give him the best of the royal dresses, the best of the food, best of the wine, best of the women, and everything was very, very royal reception. And the time was beginning to eat. As he was beginning to eat, he just looked up and saw the sword hanging on the top of the ceiling, which was just hanging on a small, on a thin horse hair. It was so much fragile, the head. The sword was very heavy and was just on the very, very sharp sword, just above the head of his poor friend. He said that, eat, the king said. He was not able to eat because the sword was always on him. And the king said, just see, you think you are happy with all of these situations, but there are so many difficulties and obstacles that I have to overcome. There are so many envious people. There are the neighboring kings who are wanting to attack. There are so many inside enemies. And therefore, do you think I am able to enjoy? So therefore, if you want to take the post of the king, it is not so easy, my dear friend. Therefore, you remain wherever you are and you are happy. So it's not your job to be the king. It's mine. Similarly, the Lord says, don't try to be God. Don't try to control. Don't try to lord it over. Don't try to have the things that you want in life because you are not God. And therefore, when we accept this simple fact, and we accept it is the business of God to be God, and it is the business our servant, to be the servant, and in this position we'll be always happy. And that's how we will become more situated solidly in our life. And therefore, ultimately, we have to give the attachment to a matter. Have you seen monkeys, how they get caught? When they try to get some nice sweets in a jar, it's the jar neck which is so narrow, because when you try to pull those sweets with full hands, they won't come out because the jar neck is made in hollow, is made so narrow in such a way that you can't pull it out. In this way, the monkeys, they get attached. They want it out, but they can't get it out. And they remain stuck there. And that's how the monkey trappers catch the monkeys. Similarly, when we get attached to the material conception of life, we get stuck up, neither we are able to enjoy it, neither we are able to release ourselves from that situation. And that's how we become completely engrossed and entangled in the cycle of birth and death. And that's how we find that the typical and the most classic example, the case study of how to let go on the spiritual platform is the famous discourse of Bhagavad Gita from Lord Krishna to Arjuna. And the first thing that Krishna explains is that you are the spirit soul and not this dying body. And that's what the greatest wonder is, that Yudhishthira Maharaj says that so many people are going to the smashan and everyone carrying things, I will not be that unfortunate one. And this understanding that the spirit soul is eternal and the body is not the real self is so important that Krishna explained Arjuna. And when you are able to give up this, then only we can fight. We can fight our battles on a day-to-day level on this knowledge. Secondly, we need to have this service attitude. Instead of trying to enjoy, if we serve the Supreme, we shall be naturally be happy. And finally, we have to cultivate a higher taste. Auguste Renoir was a very, very famous painter. Somehow or other he was paralyzed and he could not do his job nicely. And then it so happened that his friend came across, the younger to him by 15 to 20 years. And he told him, why don't you stop painting now? Now it's your life is done. And he was trying to keep his job as painting. And as he was painting, he made for the last 14 years of his paralyzed life, he kept painting. And from the last 2 years of his life was the most famous painting known as Bathers. And he said, while I paint, what happens? The beauty remains, the pain passes. Because I have got a taste. I have developed a taste for the painting that I neglect the taste or the pain of the suffering. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Ji Ki Jai. So this is how, if we cultivate a taste for the love of God, for serving the Lord, for the wonderful association, for the prasadam, for the instructions, for the nice knowledge that has been given, we will be able to immediately let go of that pain. Right? So finally, the ultimately letting go is simply let go of this web of karma. The insect, the spider on a cornfield was caught an insect in his web. As this spider caught the insect told, if you leave me today, I will give a very valuable suggestion. The insect said, what is the spider, what kind of valuable suggestion can you give me? He said, just see, my dear spider, this is a spider that you are having in a cornfield, and this cornfield is so nicely laid down. It's so systematically laid down. One day, the harvest will come. The farmer will come to harvest this cornfield, and in that harvest, the machine will come, the tractor will come, and will destroy your spider web, and you also. And you will simply die. So, escape. The harvest time is coming. The spider thought, who is this insect? Small, insignificant person telling me to go away from this place. I have seen this place, this small corn stalks growing when they were young. Now they are old. Now they are so tall. I have seen this world so many long. Nothing is going to happen to me. So this neglected the advice of this insect. Soon, one fine day, the clouds, the smoke started coming, and the huge noise of the machine came. And the spider was not able to understand what's happening. And suddenly, the tractor caught and the spider and the web in its harvest. So my dear friends, however we may try to make the most of it in our world, we have to escape or we have to face the reality. And the whole thing, the letting go, is letting go of the karma that we have got by the kind of body that we have received. If you know how the laws of karma work, we will be able to save ourselves from the final and the grim reality of death. And that is the ultimately letting go. All of us have to face it and we have to do it very nicely. And that's how we find that it's time to change. It's time that it's not so late and it is still that we have not lost much. But we have to change how we change, because all of this thing depends on the real, the conception of spiritual life. Therefore, spiritual life is very important, because however you may try on a material platform, you will just be able to adjust the reality, but you will not be able to face it with a brave heart. So once upon a time, there were a kind of mental asylum, and these patients were selected. Now they spent for 5 years. Now let's see if they are reformed or not. So John and David were two of the last category. So David was told to jump from this diving board, and he jumped down. And actually there was no water in the swimming pool. Because they were crazy, they just jumped. And this David simply went down. In fact, this pool had a little water also, but then it was not enough for them to survive, that fall. John was told to jump again. John was not told, he just jumped to save David. And he saved this drenching David, he brought unconscious. And then this David was, he took David along to save him in his room. All of the doctors, they applauded him. Great save, this fellow is sensible. Now he knows whom to save, whom to kill. And that's how they said, okay, John, we are now making your final rescue papers. Now you are mentally fit. So he said, by the way, where is David? What happened to your friend David? So John said, here in the room. And he saw that David was in the room, hanging on a fan. He just hung him on the fan and he was dead. So what happened to David? You saved him from that pool. He said, John said, I saved him, but he was completely drenched. He was completely wet. So I wanted him to dry. So I hung him there to dry. He said, still, John has not recovered from his mental illness. Similarly, however we may be in this material conception of life, the madness of the conception that I am this body does not go by simply making a material adjustment. And therefore, however you want to change in this material conception of life, you will go from one degree of madness to a greater degree of madness. And not overcoming that madness with sanity. Therefore, the real change is required internally. And that's how the greatest things that happens in life is, we'll see some quotes on change. There is a certain relief in change, even though it may be from bad to worse, as the case of John and David, right? As often I have found in traveling a stagecoach, it is often a comfort to shift one's position and be bruised in a new place. Everyone has an experience. When you're tired standing, then you don't mind the fourth seat, which is very painful, right? And when the seat is so painful, you don't mind getting up and standing for some time. So not that kind of change where we make a temporary solutions, stopgap solutions. We need to make a permanent solution, a permanent change in our consciousness. And therefore we say that if you always do what you have done, you'll always get what you have got. If you put garbage in, you get garbage out. And therefore if you put the material conception in, you get material conception out. So nice anecdote about change management, which people talk about, but seldom people put it in practice. When as a young man I wanted to change the world, I found it was difficult to change the world. Therefore, I tried to change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I couldn't change the town. As an older man, I tried to change my family. Now as an old man, I realize the only thing I can change is myself. Right? And suddenly I realize, if I long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on the town, and their impact could have changed the nation, and I could indeed have changed the whole world. Therefore, my dear friends, when you think, I need to change this situation, I need to change this person, I need to change this system. Students are talking, kya system hai, bakwas, educational system. We need a reform. We need to do something about it. And people are talking about it. People are discussing about it. People in the railway coaches are discussing how the nation should be run. What policies must be implemented. How the budget should have been actually. And not as what it is projected now. And that's how people want to change the whole world, want to change the whole scenario, but do not want to change themselves. And that is the greatest tragedy. And therefore, what we learn, that there was a king who actually went once on a stroll, and he went barefoot. As he went to the rough terrains, his soles of the feet started hurting so much. As he came back, as he was a king, he said, I will change everything now, because the soles of my feet are so paining. Let me do something, and let me make my whole travel henceforth very comfortable. So he ordered the soldiers, get the best of the covering, the best of the leather covering, and wherever I travel, cover everything with leather. The minister said, my dear king, you don't have to do that much. You don't have to make so much of violence to make this comfort. Simply get shoes for yourself. So similarly in our lives, instead of trying to change the world, trying to change the situations, if we simply get a changed pair of shoes, the life will be more better place, better life. And this way, we will have these four kind of things that we need to change. We need to change our belief. Our belief which we have held on to since our childhood, that things have to go this way. So, the quote says, generally, the theories we believe, we call them facts. And the facts we disbelieve, we call them theories. Oh, spirituality is a theory, it's not a fact. But all the statistics in the world, they're all real. Human beings are perhaps never more frightening when they're convinced beyond their doubt that they are right. Have you had any experience? I am right, you are wrong. You are wrong, I am right. And that's all that goes on. And that's the most difficult thing to face. I believe in the sun even if it isn't shining. I believe in love even when I'm alone. I believe in God even when He is silent. That's how we have to change our beliefs. And how can we change our beliefs? A very simple formula. By the foundation on Locke principle. Locke principle is the laws of God. If we simply follow what the laws of God have given us are there, we will simply be happy as an obedient citizens. Once upon a time, a US aircraft, a very famous aircraft, was flying in the Canadian airspace and found that there was a kind of an obstacle. It was detected in the radar. And it sent warning signals to this obstacle and said, get off our course. This is the famous US stealth bomber. Will destroy or smash you if you don't move away from the course. The signal from the other side came, sorry sir, we won't be able to move. And this person from this US aircraft became very, very adamant. You have to change. We have a very famous, prestigious stealth bomber. We won't move from our course. And this way, this communication came such an instant where the bomber was very, very close to this obstacle. And this obstacle finally let out a message, an alert message. Sorry, sir, we told we could not move because we are the lighthouse. And we can't move. The lighthouse in the middle of the ocean is a concrete structure and you cannot move. It was a huge tower. But this airplane thought, we can move this lighthouse. So similarly, however hard we may try to fight against the laws of God, we will never be successful. We have to change our belief, our course, on the foundation of law principle. Secondly, we have to change our expectations, how we have expectations in our life. And we find that when one door closes, another opens. But we often look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the ones which are open for us. We crucify ourselves between two thieves, regret for yesterday and fear for tomorrow. Like some two things, we expect of some people to be of certain thing, of a certain caliber, and others people expectations about us, right? So you know the famous story of a man, a father, son and his donkey. They were traveling, an old man. An old man was traveling and his son was traveling along. So this donkey was not able to bear the weight of all both of them. So the old man said to the son, you sit on the donkey and walk. I'll walk. All the people started saying, what kind of son is this? His old man is, the old father is walking along and is nicely sitting on the donkey. Foolish. So this person said, maybe we should change. And he said, okay, I'll sit on the donkey, you keep walking. Some other group of people said, what is this? This old man is sitting on the donkey and his young son, such a young, tender boy, is walking. He's allowing his father, this old man was criticized. That this old man is sitting on the donkey and his young son is walking. And then they felt they should change. Finally they thought, we'll both walk and let the donkey walk along with us. Suddenly some people started crying loudly. What big fools these both of them are. They both are walking and the donkey is also walking alongside. They are not using the donkey. What the donkey the hell is for? And that's how we can understand that we can never expect others to be always satisfied with us. And we have to be our best. And that's how we find that we have to change the way we perceive others people's expectations and how we have expectations of others as we expect others to have for us. So nicely, if you understand this, it is simply possible by letting go of this expectation by living by the will of God. If we simply accept the will of God in our life, we will be always expecting only the happiness or the grace of God that comes in our life. Finally, the judgments, very important, because the judgments what we have is actually what we think and what we perceive. Consider what you think justice requires and decide accordingly, but never give your reasons. For your judgment will probably be right, but your reasons certainly will be wrong. And like typically this situation when in this famous Harvard University, a couple came, an elderly couple, and they were very niggardly dressed and very, very frugally, and you know, they were not very good looking and well dressed people. And they asked for an audience of the president of the Harvard University. And then the president was trying to neglect them for a long time, but they were not ready to budge before meeting this president. Somehow this president arranged for the meeting, and then he asked them, so what can I do for you? He said, my son was last year in Harvard and he was so happy here, but he died accidentally just last year. We would like to build a memorial in his name in your university. He said, if we start building memorial for all of these things, then the whole university will become like a cemetery, right? We can't afford to do this. He said, no, I'm not talking that kind of memorial. I'm talking about a university building made in his name. And he started laughing. judging them to be very poor and so incapable. He said, do you know what a building costs? And he gave the whole financial thing. Go away. You are not capable of doing it. Better find some other thing. You are crazy. This couple went dejected. And what happened? They were Mr. and Mrs. Leland Stanford. And they erected a huge university just next to Harvard. That was the Stanford University. And then the president became aware that never be judgmental. You never know which kind of people whom you meet and how you lay your judgments on them. Better to be safe than to be sorry. Therefore, we need to properly let go of our judgments by forgiving. By the principle of forgiveness, we'll be always be able to judge, to give the benefit of doubt, and also be very much composed ourselves. Finally, we have to let go of our wrong choice, our choices. It says that choices are the hinges of destiny. The hardest thing to learn in life is which bridge to cross and which bridge to burn. And finally, when you have to make a choice and you don't make it, that itself is a choice. We saw Bhishma, Dronacharya and Dhritarashtra. They all were present at the disrobing of Draupadi, but they did not give their choice. They did not say anything, but it clearly indicated that they had made the wrong choice and they had to suffer for that. And Arjuna chose Krishna to be charioteer, disregarding the entire army of Krishna. While Duryodhana consciously chose the energy of Krishna, the army. But who benefited by making the right choice? Arjuna. Therefore, we have to simply let go of these wrong choices by standing to integrity and honor, and not by how the world accepts us. Usually we go by the world, we go by how the world accepts us, and that's how we follow the religion of the masses. But we have to follow, because Arjun was simply, they were the losers, but they simply made the right choice and they became victorious. That's how we have to make spirituality the right choice, even though we may be in minority. Minority in this material world, but the 3/4 of the creation is the spiritual world. Therefore, we are never in minority, we are the ones in majority. And therefore, never think that we are the losers. And then, now we'll briefly discuss. These are the stages where you have to go through when you have to let go. These were the background, these were the beliefs, judgment, expectations and choices. But you have to go stage by stage. You will face in your life on a physical platform, on a psychological platform, on a spiritual platform. Stage one, very important. What will happen in your life is that first thing when the things don't go and when you have to let go, first thing you say, I can't control what is happening in the world. The principle is that I am not the controller. And what is the attitude? The humility of being the servant of the master. And therefore we can understand very clearly that one who has understood the philosophy of the Gita, he will definitely understand, and when things don't go his way, he won't complain. He accepts this humbly in his life and goes forward. What is the stage two in letting go? First thing you say, I can accept that if it doesn't go my way, there is some good reason for it, though I can't see what that might be. Usually we are not very easy to see the things in the right perspective the first time. And then what is the principle? You have to accept that there is a superior intelligence involved who must be guiding my life. And third is that you have to develop patience. The third stage is that we have to say, I am not God and I don't know what that good reason is now, but I simply remain open-minded, then I will find it. And what is the principle? God is all good and all loving. He definitely cares for me. He knows what is best for me in my life, and therefore He will give me that. And that's the attitude of having the faith and confidence in the Lord. A soldier who was running away from the enemy soldiers hid into a cave, and he kneeled to God and prayed that the soldiers will come and attack me and kill me and capture me, Oh Lord, if you simply save me, I'll dedicate the rest of my life years to you. As soon as he prayed, a spider started weaving a web on the wall, on the entrance of the cave. And he said, I prayed to God and the Lord sent me a spider. What a spider can do? Soon, as the enemy soldiers were coming close by, the spiders completed his web and sealed the entrance of the cave. The soldiers came through right at that cave and he felt, I am finished. I had to do something to protect myself. The Lord is not going to help me. And as soon as the soldiers saw this spider's web, they thought, if there is a spider's web here, if someone has to enter, someone has to break and open this spider's web, therefore no one will be inside here. Therefore they went ahead. And this person was so moved in how the Lord had sent a spider to help him. And he said, where there is God, spider is a stone wall. And where God is not, a stone wall is a spider's web. And that's how we have to see everything in the life with faith and confidence in the arrangement of the Lord. And finally, in the stage 4, we have to say, I have to let go of what I think it should be and I will find that it is far better. Principle is that we have to harmonize with the plan of the supreme intelligence. And attitude is that of surrender. And therefore we say that we have to simply let go and let God. Let go of all of these things, this unwanted things, and if you have let all these unwanted things, you can let God in your lives. The classic examples from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharat are that of Gajendra and Draupadi. As long as Gajendra was capable, thinking that I am capable to fight this crocodile in this water, he kept fighting for so many thousands of years until he realized only the Lord can help me. Even in this pain, in this suffering, he simply prayed out for the shelter of the Lord and he offered a lotus flower. And immediately Lord Vishnu arrived and slashed that crocodile, relieving him from all the suffering. Draupadi tried to depend on her husbands, on her in-laws, on the whole assembly, the pious assembly. But when she realized that I cannot get help from all of these people, I have to let go of my dependence on this insignificant, on this unreliable sources, and I have to pray for the mercy of God. That's how Draupadi cried helplessly the name of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna appeared to send, to wound Draupadi in unlimited robes of sari. That's how we realize, as long as we have the principle of letting God in, a very nice poem, as children bring their broken toys with tears for us to mend, I brought my broken dreams to God because He is my friend. But then instead of leaving Him and in peace to work alone, I hung around and tried to help with many ways that were my own. At last I snatched them back, those dreams again, and cried, how can you be so slow? My child, he said, what could I do? You never did let them go. As long as we stick to our own plans, our own way of happening, things that happen our own way, we never allowed the Lord to interfere and make our lives more meaningful. Therefore, my dear friends, let go, let God. And finally, the Bhagavad Gita gives us the balancing factor. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful reaction as the lotus leaf is untouched by the water. And if you want to increase or decrease the pain or letting go of the pain, a nice story to conclude. A master said to his disciple who told him how to see the pain, how to perceive the pain. He gave him a salt and told him to put the salt in a pinch of salt in a glass of water and told him, drink this. And he said, it's a lot of salt. It's a lot of salty. It tastes very sour. Then the same salt, he put a pinch of salt in a big lake and told, now take the water from the lake and taste. So that's absolutely not at all sour. It's nice taste. He said, the pain remains the same. but depends which container that you put and you perceive it. If you simply become selfish, narrow-minded, and trying to gratify your own senses and try to enjoy yourself independent of the Supreme Lord, it's like putting that salt in a glass of water. But when you expand and when you become selfless, you give your heart, you do your duties, but you give the results to the Supreme Lord, then it's like putting that pinch of salt into the lake, and then you can taste the nice taste of the clear crystal lake water. Therefore, Radha Gopinath Prabhu, when he just heard the last time Sunday feast and the last prana announcement that this topic I was going to present, so he said that the first thing that came to my mind, definitely you must try to speak, and just was so striking that I could not resist speaking this. And he's told that this topic is all about these four things: chodo, todo, modo, jodo. Chodo, your material conception of life, the way that you think the life is. Todo, break with courage. Don't just let this thing continue. Don't just attend like another prana festival and you come for the next. Make a change. Todo, and then modo. Make a change, give a bend, give a direction, and then jodo. Jodo with the Supreme, connect with the Supreme, and always be happy in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we say that the Bhagavad Gita says that, O Arjuna, therefore surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. So you will become a spiritual warrior when you get this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and fight on the real conception of life. And that's how we said that if you simply follow the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, then the life becomes sublime. And what is our life? We have to become Arjuna, like a spiritual warrior. Let the battle begin, and the Lord says, victory shall be yours. Wherever there is Arjuna and wherever there is Krishna, there is guarantee, victory, opulence, and all morality. So with the power of God, with the mercy of God, with the instructions of God, we can really let go of this unwanted material existence, and we can let God in our lives to make our lives happy, sublime. And the tool or the weapon is the sublime chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So thank you very much, and we appreciate the patience and tolerance of all the assembled participants here. I hope that this was a kind of change that you like to go and take along in your life, and please do make a change today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.